everybody, and welcome to the On Her Turf podcast. We're happy to have you back with us. With the Stanley Cup final underway, we thought it would be a great time to highlight some powerhouse women in the hockey world. We first caught up with the three stars of the U.S. Women's National Hockey Team, Kendall Coyne Schofield, Hillary Knight, and Lee Steckline, as they were prepping for the World Championships. We were able to talk to them about how special this national team is and how they've bonded, what winning an Olympic medal has done for the growth of hockey, and what this sport has really taught them. And then we were fortunate enough to speak with Heidi Browning, the Chief Marketing Officer of the NHL. We talked about her career path, how important the fans are to the game, how she manages, believe it or not, her bi-coastal travel schedule. Yes, she goes back and forth between New York and California all the time. And what she does to stay balanced. So I hope you enjoy the conversations, everyone. What's it like when you guys get to get back together again and play and kind of, you know, rekindle this team mentality that you guys have?
It's so exciting to get back together. It's something we always look forward to, whether you're on this team or you're not. You're constantly thinking about it and thinking about that moment you get to get back together because you're working so hard to represent your country day in and day out, and we don't always have the opportunities, so we're getting more opportunities, so you really cherish it when you get together.
It's definitely, I mean, as Kendall said, you cherish it, and it's a really special group to be a part of, and to have the honor of representing your country on a world stage, but I think more so to also be in the room with such talented, amazing young women who are out there breaking barriers and doing incredible things off the ice equally to what they're doing on the ice.
Yeah, I mean, they've said it, getting together, it doesn't happen very often. You never know when it's going to be your last time. So it's always really special. Every group is a little bit different, but we really, really enjoy being together.
How difficult is it? You know, you win the gold medal, you come back to the States, and you realize that this is a group that might not be the same group in 4 years when we try to win another Olympic medal. And, you know, the glory of all of it is so exciting. But then there's also, it's like graduating high school or college, and you realize some of these friends I'm not going to be with down the road. I mean, can it be a little bittersweet at times as well?
Absolutely. That's the reality of a national team. That's the reality of being an elite athlete, is the moment a team is named, you know there's a 99% chance that team is not going to be together after that tournament, after that Olympic Games, or whatever the situation may be. But when you accomplish your dream and put a gold medal around your neck with that group, that lasts forever. And you remember that team, you remember every member on that team, and you look forward to the next time you have that opportunity. And whoever is on that ice in that moment, you share that bond with forever.
Yeah, lasting relationships with every team you're on. It's just something that ties you together. And even if someone's retired or whatever happens, you find a way, they find a way back to come back and visit, or wherever we're living, we're near each other, hopefully. So we get to keep those relationships going.
We're more than a year removed now from the South Korean gold medal win for you guys. Has anything changed perspective-wise on what you guys achieved then, you know, from when you got off the plane out of South Korea to now? Hillary, you're laughing?
Yeah.
I think what's been the most eye-opening is how long the drought was, and seeing the impact the gold medal has had specifically on the United States and so many young girls picking up the sport like we did back in 98 when we saw the 98 team win. And to think we went 20 years, and to think the limited growth between 98 and 2018 is what has impacted me. And I know our team is so passionate about growing the game. And I think after winning a gold medal, it was just so amazing to share that moment and hear all these young girls saying, I want to do what you did, and I want to go to the Olympics. And even young boys saying, you know, can I see your gold medal? And I want to go to the Olympics too, has been pretty cool. Mm-hmm. As we look a year back.
What about the opportunities that have presented themselves to you guys from a marketing standpoint, from sponsorship standpoint? I know Adidas has offered many opportunities for many of you, you Kendall in particular. I mean, Hillary, you've got GoPro, you've got all kinds of great endorsements. How much did that change after that gold medal win? And you know, what's it like for you to get all these opportunities thrown your way?
I think it's incredible. I think obviously the gold medal win brought us back a tangible success we can share with other people, and we're sort of the dream team, and the way we came together and had that incredible feat, but it's definitely added a lot more visibility, as Kendall said, to what we're trying to accomplish. And then obviously companies and, you know, whether it's on the ice or off the ice, they want to be involved. And now we're seeing the rivalry series and other amazing opportunities that might not have come from, you know, a win of such magnitude.
And I would say it's earned. It's about time people are starting to recognize us it took a gold medal win, rightfully so, because it was a long time coming. But you know, we work so hard day in and day out, just as hard as the NHLers do. So it's amazing to finally see players in women's hockey getting the credit that they deserve.
Yeah, and I think too, like, in previous Olympics, there's all this lead up to the Olympics and so much attention on us, and it's all about the Olympics. And now people want to know where we're playing, what we're doing on the years leading into the Olympics. So I think that's what's special now, and what's a big game changer for us in the United States is that people want to know what we're doing day in and day out, and that's going to change our sport dramatically.
I thought it was so cool for Hockey Day in America. You guys had such a following in Detroit, and you had such a following throughout that whole 3-day tournament with Canada, and it was really eye-opening, you know, for someone like me who was sitting in the stands watching all the young fans that were gravitating to you guys. I mean, you guys are superstars, and it's got to be quite a difference from, let's say, 10 years ago, 5 years ago, and you must be pretty proud of that.
Yeah, it's incredible how the sport has grown. Obviously, you know, we're in it, so we want to grow as fast as it can, and we never think enough growth is enough. But it's taken off recently. It's one of the fastest growing sports right now, and we couldn't be in women's hockey at a better time.
I recently read an article also that they're dedicating more ice time at local rinks to hockey teams, women's hockey teams, than figure skating, because figure skating requires one skater or two skaters on the ice at a time, whereas they've recognized that hockey promotes so much more from a team perspective. Girls gain more confidence. They learn, you know, hard work and dedication through the team environment. What do you say to that, Lee, when you see that and you hear about that, that hockey's really kind of transcending other activities on the ice?
I think we really enjoy that. Like they said, we want to grow the game as much as possible. And I would agree that team sports in particular had a huge impact on me when I was young. I think you learn so many valuable skills, and the more we have girls recognizing that and staying in sports longer, I think it'll just build a better and better future.
And I don't think any of us would be the people we are today without team sports. We've learned so many just characteristics, whether it's teamwork, sacrifice, dedication, camaraderie, how to communicate. All of these tangible pieces to our life came from being a part of a team sport.
One of the things that's interesting to me too, and I know Hillary, you've spoken about this before, is that there's a lot of shy personalities in the game, and everybody comes from a different mold, right, in life, but sports promotes that encouragement to speak up, and you mentioned communication. How difficult is it when you have this spotlight on you, but you tend to gravitate towards being more personable or a shy individual, but you have to recognize that this attention is on you? Can that be a difficult thing to balance, Hillary?
Yeah, it's definitely difficult. There's different personalities, as you said, but it's, I think when you're around long enough, you understand that you wear multiple hats, and it's sort of a responsibility to take that time, even though you're not outgoing or extroverted, to really establish a connection with a fan, because each person you meet is a potential fan, a potential ice hockey player, someone who could be inspired by you, someone you can touch personally and have a positive impact in their life. So I think when you think about it that way, what an amazing opportunity it is versus, you know, kind of retreating into your shell. But it definitely is a tough dynamic to balance, and you have to also take time for yourself to make sure that you're whole and complete too.
What about social media for you guys? You guys are all very active. You're all very positive. Tons of followers. Everybody wants to know where you are, what you're doing, what you're eating, how you're training. But social media can be very, very difficult for so many people in many different ways. What would you say, you guys, you know, Kendall, I'll start with you, what your message would be to young women and young girls that are on the social media platform, using it as a way to try and gain that confidence? What would you say to that?
I would say use it in a positive way, because there are a lot of negative things on the internet, and you have to filter out the bad things and focus on the good things. And I think we all take that role very seriously as role models to these young girls through our social media platforms, trying to maybe post workout videos, things we do, things we eat. You mentioned that, and just being the ultimate role model, and social media allows us to connect to those young girls in such a unique way that we didn't have when we were kids. Mm-hmm. We simply were the generation that looked forward to meeting Cammy Granato. I know that's our hero, but you know, and seeing her, and that was, you know, our way of knowing we can be her. Mm-hmm. And now there's so many young girls that can see us through that platform, and I think it's so important for us to realize that and to continue to be role models.
Yeah, and Kendall kind of said it best. It's trying to use your platform in a positive way, and girls who are looking for confidence, obviously keep it positive. Obviously there's going to be some, you know, haters out there, and they're going to say these crazy things, but Also understanding that it's not necessarily real life, and don't put all your stock into what's going on online, and making sure that you develop a good friendship and group around you, support group, to really help you accomplish whatever it is in your life that you want to accomplish. But I think, too, you can use your platform in a positive way to help impact other people.
Kendall, you've said the NHL, they always say hockey is for everyone. And you recently said they don't just talk the talk, they walk the walk. I mean, they've done so many things to help promote hockey for everybody across the board, male, female, you name it. They recently committed to the NHL and NHLPA, to the Female Advisory Committee. What was your guys' reaction to that when you saw that committee was established?
I personally wasn't surprised because, like you just said, they walk the walk, and we saw that a couple months ago at the All-Star Game as well, and I think they did an awesome job by creating that committee filled with incredible women, filled with inclusion and diversity, to talk about growing the game, and in a time when the game is just growing in front of our eyes. It's incredible. So I was not surprised by it. I don't know. One of my favorite people, Annie Kamens from the Chicago Blackhawks, is on it. I was like, she's awesome. This is going to be great. And so I'm excited to see what comes out of it, and I know it's going to be great.
Yeah. It's not news. Yeah. We just knew that they're going to come up with something amazing, and, you know, they're movers and shakers.
Yeah.
And, we've obviously benefited from a lot of support that they've given us, so no surprise there.
What about the NHL players? Because you guys get to spend time. You train with them sometimes in the off season. You have interactions with them. I know, Kendall, you had some interactions with them at the All-Star Game as well, but how have they advocated for you guys? I mean, have you had many interactions with them personally, Lee? Or
I know in Minnesota, being a part of the Minnesota Whitecaps, we've had a ton of support from the Wild, the organization in general, and the players, I think, too. And the more that happens, I know it's kind of across all of our teams, wherever we are. So it's awesome. It definitely makes us feel excited, makes us, you know, really grateful to the NHL again for what they're doing.
I played in the Chicago Pro Hockey League this summer. Had to play against Patrick Kane. It was fine. And Alex DeBrincat. It was fine.
No big deal.
Yeah. We beat him in the semis.
There you go.
But I think what's so fun about playing with them or against them is their respect for us as hockey players. They don't care that we have a ponytail. Mm-hmm. They don't care that I'm 6 or 7 inches shorter. They're there to play the game just as I am. And for people to see that validates what we do every day, because they don't care what our gender is. They don't care what league we play in. They respect us for our talent. And I think that's what's so fun about being around them and having their support. And they just voted Hillary the top player in women's hockey. No big deal.
That must make you feel pretty good, Hillary.
That's cool. I mean, whenever your peers are, you know, giving you an accolade, I think it almost means more just because they're in it too. They understand what it takes. And obviously it's one award and it's an individual award, and I'm more of a team person and I like that, but it's also, it's a huge honor and a really cool recognition.
I remember being in Boston when you were playing with some of the Bruins in the off season and training up there, and I would ask the guys, like, well, how is she? Like, how difficult is it to play? And they're like, she's really tough. I mean, those are the guys that are playing. Who are some of the toughest guys you've gone up against that you've played with?
Oh my gosh, I don't know. gosh, I don't even know. I mean, it was cool. I remember, you know, how Gail was coming to the end of his career and getting on the ice and being able to practice, like, one-on-ones with him. And he's obviously such a huge body, nothing we usually see on the women's side. And him just giving me pointers on how to, like, drop a shoulder into him and what works better than, you know, what I was doing before. But, you know, those are the opportunities, as Kendall said, that are going to make us better but also make them better. And to share the ice with great talent, great players, it's awesome.
And I think people would be surprised about how much they follow us. We all follow them. They know that. But I think the typical fan would be shocked to know how much they support us and follow us on a daily basis. I remember having a conversation with Patrick Kane, and he goes, you just signed with the Minnesota team, right? And I was like, I did.
How did you know that?
You know, and it honestly caught me by surprise, but I'm like, that's so cool. They respect us as hockey players. They know what we're doing and support us just like we support them.
Any advice that anybody has shared with any of the NHL guys, have shared with either one of you three? Or maybe tips on the ice, or have you picked their brain on anything? I mean, you get to hang, you know, play with Patrick Kane. He's one of the greatest of all time, right?
You just try not to get dangled, KT.
But do you ever ask them anything, you know, about their game or their style, or maybe And if the answer is no, that's totally fine.
I'm trying to think.
I do. I think I told you this story before, but when I went on the ice for the All-Star Skills Competition, we were warming up. Henrik Lundqvist was in the net, and I didn't need a shoot, but I was like, Henrik Lundqvist is in the net. I really want to shoot on him. This is a really cool opportunity.
Of course.
And I just remember coming down thinking, don't hit him in the head, and good luck.
Right.
And I looked. I couldn't see anything. I'm like, this is a large human. How do these guys score? I know he doesn't get scored on a lot, but I was talking to Patrick Sharp about it, and, you know, he led me to, well, you know, you shoot to where his glove is not going to be, and I was like, that's a good point, but I still didn't see anything, but I guess that's why you are where you are, and you learn as you go through your experiences. So it was cool to hear from him and how he scores on Lundqvist, or he did score on Lundqvist.
Yeah. And then, I think, obviously, like, Mike Matheson has a close connection to our team, but just his tidbits on how he shoots and how he gets people to get out of the lane. And I saw him working with a handful of RD, and then they were practicing that, you know, in the games. I'm like, oh my gosh, like, what better person to teach something, like, hands-on, one of the top defensemen in the world. And now we're learning things that haven't been brought to us before.
Let's talk about the travel you guys have. You're always on the road. You're always on the go. What are some of the tips you have as far as ways you maintain balance, ways you try to relax on the road, maybe items you can't live without when you're traveling?
Pinky.
Yeah.
Who's your pinky?
Your water bottle.
Kendall's water bottle. Okay. Yeah. Is it Kendall's hair tie? Because you always have the pink hair tie, too.
That, too. So double pinky. Two pinkies.
So you have a pinky water bottle you can't live without.
No. Okay. Hydration is key when you're traveling, especially if you have to get an aisle seat if you want to stay hydrated. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, aisle's key.
Yeah.
Aisle's key. That's so funny. I'm a window person. I would never think
you have to stay hydrated.
That's true. What about you, Hillary? One item you can't leave behind.
Honest, if we're competing, I love my Normatec. I mean, I can't. Normatec and my own heart rate monitor, it sounds so silly, but we all kind of have this social platform where we're checking in on each other. But, you know, Normatec, you just kind of sit there and it just, like, flows up with air.
So what is it? Is it those things you guys put your legs
in? Yeah. Okay. So they're great. And then I know, like, a lot of us have been watching, I can't remember her name, but the lady who teaches you how to pack your suitcase. So I think that's key, is learning how to pack and rolling your clothes. The rolling method is the key.
Unless you have small clothes. Some of us aren't as petite as you are, Kendall. What about you, Lee? What can't you leave behind?
I think we have a lot of time on the road sometimes, so I love to bring enough books. We'll bring a team puzzle sometimes if we are all together. Hydration is also important, but you need something to do in the downtime.
What's your favorite book you've read recently?
I haven't read one in a while, but I brought one, Janet Ivanovich. She's got that long series, the One for the Money series. So I think it's her 25th book out now. That I'm going to read on the plane.
Awesome.
I just read Becoming by Michelle Obama. Amazing.
Did you enjoy it? That's on my list. I have a couple I got to get to that's still sitting next to my bedstand. Yeah. Hillary, do you like to read or podcasts?
I do. No, I like to read. I was actually just talking about it. The last book I read was Bad Blood, about the Theranos scandal, which is valued at $10 billion. So that was a very interesting read. So.
You travel a lot.
I do.
What's
my tip? Oh my God, the rolling method for sure for packing. Yeah. What do I do? Always hydrating. I know these are boring. I bring books for sure. I'm just trying to think of my go-to lip gloss. I don't leave anywhere without lip gloss. I go to the gym with lip gloss. That's like my thing. Yeah, it's really bad. What else do I do? I always bring a sweatshirt because even during the cup final when it's super hot wherever we go, the hotel rooms are always really cold and the production trucks are very cold. So I always bring a zip up hoodie. Keeps me cozy and warm. Yeah.
How big's your bag?
My bag. Ooh, we're reversing this podcast. My bag is huge. Yeah. Okay. They ship my wardrobe ahead usually for on-air stuff. So they'll ship it to different cities where we are, which is nice. It alleviates some room in packing. But when you're on the road for 2 weeks, like, I don't know if we're going to dinners. I don't know if I have events I might get called for. So it's about, it's a pretty big bag. And then I always have like a backpack and a little suitcase for work too. So
you have to check it kind of bag.
Oh, not only do I check it, but all the guys give me so much heat because they're like, well, how much is this one going to weigh? It's always over.
You gotta put your toe underneath it.
I never knew that.
When you're weighing it in.
Hockey bag trick.
Put your toe up.
Put your toe up?
Yeah.
oh, they're totally going to see that. See, I'm a klutz, so I'm going to be like, hold on, I'll try and do something. They're going to totally see that. But oh, that's a good trick. Look at you guys, scam artists. I like it. That's funny. Well, this has been fun, guys. And keep doing what you're doing and inspiring everybody. I mean, everybody loves watching you guys and reading about you and seeing your success. So keep it going.
Thanks for joining us.
Yeah.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah.
Our special thanks to Kendall, Hillary, and Lee. So much fun catching up with them. And by the way, after the interview, the U.S. national team took off for Finland, where they captured the gold medal at the Women's Hockey World Championship. So a huge congratulations to Team USA. And as I mentioned earlier, we spoke to Heidi Browning as the NHL playoffs had just gotten underway. Take a listen. And we are very excited to have Heidi join us now as Executive Vice President and Chief Marketing Officer of the National Hockey League. And Heidi, this is the best time of year, of course, and so much for us to discuss right here on the On Her Turf podcast. But first, I want to get an idea of where you are right now, the sense of place, because I know you split your time between San Francisco and New York City. So give me an idea of where you're at right now.
Well, today I am very thrilled to be on the podcast with you, so thank you for inviting me. Today I'm on the West Coast. I'm in San Francisco and getting ready to do some meetings and then head to San Jose for the game tomorrow night.
Oh, my gosh. So let's talk about these games, and in particular San Jose. This is an incredible time of year, the Stanley Cup playoffs, the Stanley Cup final. From your perspective, what does this time of year mean to you and your team?
Oh, gosh, this is the most exciting time of year for all of us, whether you're working at the league or playing in the playoffs or being a fan. And this season, we have had the most exciting playoffs ever. I mean, when you're looking at all of the storylines that have come out with four wild card teams knocking out our top seeds, we've had 13 overtime games this postseason and three double overtime. It's just been so exciting and unpredictable. Our team is just trying to keep up so that we can continue to share the stories and the moments with fans as they're happening through our social media channels.
Yeah, and you guys do such a great job with that. The social media, I love all the social media platforms from all the teams. I mean, the funny anecdotes that come out and the jabbing back and forth. I mean, it's all in good fun. But I think what we've learned from these playoffs is that we expect the unexpected at this point. I mean, we have seen, as you mentioned, the wild cards trailblazing over the top seeds, which is unheard of. I mean, maybe once in a series or one series it might happen, but the way it's happened repeatedly in the East and the West has been unbelievable. When you look at those storylines that are unfolding, how has that changed your approach and what that's meant from the fan engagement perspective of what you guys do?
Well, we have to be very agile, right? And so, because this is unscripted drama happening every night on the ice. And so we mobilize every day to think about what could the storylines be each night. We scenario plan. We have content revved up and ready to go. And we have teams working through the day, through the games, and then overnight to create the content so that we can push out the stories and promotions the following day. And we try to highlight different aspects of the game and the players so that we can really excite other people to tune in. Whether your team's in or not, these playoffs are some of the exciting, most exciting playoffs out there of all sports, and we want to use these storylines to pull in some new and casual fans.
Yeah, I think what's so cool is you mentioned that in all of sports, I mean, people that don't usually, let's say they might be a casual hockey fan or they tune in a couple times throughout the season, they really get engaged this time of year, which for me, I love because I get messages from family members and friends that aren't necessarily tuning in every night of the week when I'm on from October until March. But then this time of year, they're like, what's this Carolina team all about? What's this team like? And oh my gosh, were you on the air last night when this happened? And I find it really interesting how this is the time of year when you can really grab fans. I mean, fans that don't usually tune in become fans for life watching some of these games.
Exactly. And that's our hope. And the more we can get these stories out there, the more opportunity we have to hook the new fans with the excitement of the sport.
So you mentioned you're going to be attending the games. I imagine you do every opportunity you can. But, I mean, do you get to watch from a fan perspective, Heidi? Or are you more, like, what is it like going to a game with you?
I love to watch from a fan perspective. I get the opportunity to watch from anywhere in the house, if you will. But I really do like to sit in the stands with the fans. I love to chat with them. Sometimes I let them know I'm with the NHL. Sometimes I don't say anything. But I love to just get insights on how they perceive the game, why they're fans, how long they've been fans, what they love about it. And it really helps me understand what are the kind of opportunities that can come out of this from a marketing and communication standpoint.
Do you have a favorite spot in the arena that you like to watch the game?
I like to sit down low. Down low is where you feel the game. But I like to sit everywhere and anywhere because every area within each arena is unique. And so that's the other really cool thing about this job is I get to go to any and every arena and experience, the pride in the building, the fandom that happens and just how much work goes into putting on a show every night. I just love every bit about that.
I love, you mentioned being down low. This year, it was a Wednesday night hockey game, and I was there with a member of our production team, and we were actually sitting at ice level in Pittsburgh, and it was the Oilers and the Penguins game, and it was the first time I had seen Connor McDavid that up close and personal. I mean, I've watched hundreds of his games, whatever it may be, and, we watch from up top, or we're watching on the air, and we're broadcasting the intermissions, but seeing him up close and personal and the speed with which he plays the game, and then Leon Draisaitl, his line mate, who's also, seeing the perspective down low, I could not get over, and in all the years I've been broadcasting hockey, I could not get over how talented of a player he is, and it kind of makes me wish that every fan at some point could sit at ice level and watch how fast these guys are, how big they are, what they're doing on skates. I mean, it's just tremendous.
Absolutely. That's a great story. And it's absolutely true. We know that when fans get to experience hockey live for their first time, kind of no matter where they sit within the arena, that's when you truly appreciate the sport itself. So we have a program that we're doing called NHL First Timer in partnership with Paul Bissonnette, where we bring a person for their very first time to a game so that they can experience the excitement that live hockey is.
That's so cool. I didn't even know that. Do they get to sit with Paul? Does he go with them to the game?
Oh, yeah. Paul is their host.
And that's great. I mean, what better way to really learn the game than from someone who's played it?
Exactly. Our first episode was with Jalen Ramsey, so it was a really great opportunity to really cross-promote and cross-pollinate our sport with other sports as well as first-time NHLers.
Yeah, he's done a great job, too. And I think, the NHL and your team in general has done a great job at really getting to know these players off the ice with some of the off-the-cuff features, what's in the box, which I think is hilarious. But, you really start to see the personal side of these guys. And hockey players are just so humble and so reserved, very personable, but also very private. So I would imagine from your perspective, that can be a challenge at times as well, promoting the player, but also respecting the fact that they are very humble and proud individuals, which is what makes them great and what makes this sport so great. But from your perspective, is that a challenge at times?
Oh, it absolutely is a challenge, and it's a wonderful challenge, right? Because hockey is the sport where you play for the name on the front of your sweater, not the name on the back, and it's really part of our ethos. And so we also know that fans really want to know the players up close and personal. They want to know who they are off the ice. They want to know about their families and their workouts and their food habits and all of that kind of stuff. And it's so important to have that one-to-one connection from a fan perspective. So we've been trying to strike a balance, which is, hey, it's always been about the team and it will continue to be so, but we have to start telling more stories and getting the personalities of our players out there because that's what fans want. And we find opportunities and moments to do that, like at Player Media Tour and at All-Star, but we're having a lot of success with players sharing their lives on social media through things like Cup Confidential. I don't know if you've seen that series that we're running right now. It's another, sneak peek into what happens behind the scenes and hopefully in a low impact way for the clubs to participate. But again, it's what the fans want. And the more we can give that, the tighter relationship our players and fans will have and the more we have an opportunity to grow.
Yeah, I love the episode with Joe Thornton. I mean, can we ever just, we can't get enough of Joe Thornton. He's just the best. Best off the ice, best on the ice. I mean, what a career he's had. But Heidi, another thing that I found so interesting that you guys are doing, and I recently read this, you and your team are recruiting a group of youth advisors. So they're going to be known as the NHL's power players, helping the league kind of better connect with that Gen Z, get them invested in the sport, ages 13 to 17 years old. Tell me about what came about this philosophy, this project of yours, why you guys found this important to wire into younger individuals who can help build the NHL brand.
Well, the idea was first came to me because I received a letter in the mail, a physical letter in the mail from a young girl named Sabrina Solomon in New York. And she'd read an article about me and how we're really focused on trying to transform our marketing so that we're relevant for the next generation. And she said, you know, she was off for the summer and she had all this free time and would be willing to work and help me with some ideas. She's a super passionate hockey fan. In fact, she knows every rule by the book, by the number. I mean, she's that passionate about hockey. She plays hockey. And so obviously she couldn't work for us because she's young, but we brought her into the league and we, you know, I gathered around a number of people in different roles thinking, oh, she could kind of meet different types of people in the organization and see what path potentially she could take in for a career in hockey if it wasn't going to be on the ice. And she came into this meeting and she had a PowerPoint presentation filled with ideas about how we could market to the next generation. And as we sat around and she presented these ideas to us, she had such poise and confidence. And a lot of the ideas were really great. And many of them we were already doing. And for me, that was like such an aha moment. It's, you know, you can do all these marketing things in the world, but if it's not resonating with the audience that you're intending, then you have to go back and revisit it and listen. And so from that, we thought about this concept of what if we had a whole board of advisors in North America, young hockey fans who could help us translate our marketing into a way that is relevant and interesting and exciting to their peers. And so we just launched the program. We had our first round of applicants come in, but they closed last week. We've narrowed it down and we're about to finalize with interviews over the course of the next week to get to our final list of power players.
That is awesome. First of all, I love that Sabrina took the time to handwrite a letter. I mean, holy cow, that is like a lost art to be able to reach out to someone, you know, with a physical handwritten note. But how old is Sabrina, you said?
Well, she was 11 at the time. And wow. So now she's old enough to be, you know, eligible for the power players because now she's 13 and mm-hmm. We're, you know, excited. She is one of the applicants, as you may have guessed, yep. For the board.
That's so cool. So then this board will ultimately kind of come together. Obviously, they're going to be located in different parts of North America. Will they be communicating via FaceTime? Will you be bringing them to the league offices for roundtable discussions? How is that, you know, how does that idea pan out for you guys?
Yeah, we're going to leverage as much technology as possible. So leveraging video conferencing and collaboration tools so that we can start to ideate and share and make sure that they all get to know each other and are comfortable with each other. We want to make sure that, although everyone I've met who's in Gen Z never seems to be shy, so we want to make sure that they feel really at ease sharing their ideas. And then I'm going to visit each of the markets in which they live and, you know, meet with them there. If there's a team close by, we'll go to a game, have them meet our own club and leadership there, because there's so much that we can learn from listening to these generations. And there's so many things that we can do now to get ahead of what the future fan wants, right? And right. I think that they're redefining what it means to be a fan. And traditionally, we've always thought about fans as you purchase tickets and you go to games and you watch on TV. Well, fandom can, there are many, many many paths to fandom, and it can be defined in many ways. You could have somebody who's, an esports gamer who follows us on social media and claims to be a Bruins fan, but might never have been to an actual game. They're still a fan. They still buy jerseys. They still tell stories about being a Bruins fan out to their friends. And that's the kind of thing that I think we just need to reframe our definition of fandom so that we know how to embrace it and continue to encourage it.
Oh, I love it. And encouraging opportunities, too, for the youth that are watching, that are paying attention, that are very smart. You know, they know stuff that we don't know. So I feel very old when I'm around 13 to 17-year-olds. Like, what is that social media platform?
I have great hope for them. They're very pragmatic in how they see the world. And they're also, they grew up having answers at their fingertips all the time. They grew up with Google at their fingertips. So no question ever went unanswered. And I think as a result of that, it's a very empowered generation, and you see them starting businesses when they're 6 and 7 and 8 years old, and then they evolve into legitimate businesses, and so they just think that they can achieve any potential and they will change the world. And it's just refreshing to kind of see that see that drive in them, and I do feel like we should listen to them because they are out there trying to innovate innovate to keep themselves interested, but innovating on behalf of the businesses and the brands that they love.
Well, that's a great transition, Heidi, for me to get to you now, because I want to know a little bit more about where your drive and your, business expertise came from. Did you always have that drive when you were younger to go this path that you've taken?
I've always been an overachiever in my younger years, but I never thought I would end up as the CMO of the National Hockey League. I initially went to college. I was going to be a lawyer. I was going to maybe turn into a diplomat. That was really the path that I had set forth from an educational standpoint. But at one point in my career, I realized that I had a knack for marketing, got into digital marketing and social media, and I've never looked back. I've been so passionate about it, and I feel so fortunate to have found something that I love so much that now is a job. And the opportunity to bring this passion and knowledge around digital and social and mobile and data and bring it to the league has just been such an incredible experience, because I get to bring a little bit of what I know to a new industry, and I'm learning so much about sports and the sports ecosystem and everything that goes into it that is just, fueling continued curiosity and fascination with this role.
Oh, I love that word you use, curiosity, because I think that is so it says a lot about your path, because you mentioned you weren't always in sports. I mean, you've been recognized as one of the most powerful women in music by Billboard. Your years working with Pandora. Most recently, you were one of Adweek's most powerful women in sports. So you've transcended so many different industries and been successful doing so. I'm wondering if there's like a common denominator that has worked for you, whether you're marketing sports, whether you're marketing in music, that has allowed you to have that success across all platforms.
Yeah, I think the one common denominator is taking the perspective of the fan or the consumer or the human. Like, this is what drives our business, is really taking a fan-first approach. And then once you look at business through the eyes of the fan, it changes everything. It unlocks how you communicate, what kind of content you create, where you create. All of those things are so important, and that is the common thread throughout all my career.
Wow. Let me talk about, you're a much sought after featured speaker at industry conferences, in smaller groups, TED Women Talks. When you're approaching these speaking engagements, what is your primary message? And in particular, when you're speaking to a group of women, because this podcast is all about, empowering the individual and finding that inner strength, that inner confidence. So what kind of advice do you try to convey when you're speaking to different groups?
I always talk about the power of positivity and positively reframing conversations inside your head. We all have those moments of self-doubt or I could have done it better, I could have said it differently. And if you continue to look at life through that lens, you're always focused on the wrong part of it, right? So if you try to reframe every conversation with a positive and how can you build from the positive and grow, I find that that's been very, very helpful. The other piece of advice that I always hold dear to my heart and think about almost every day is a piece of advice that a friend shared with me once when I got my very first big executive job. And he said, you know, don't let them change you. You are where you are because of who you are. And that's where we all need to remain true to ourselves and be confident that you are, you know, I like try to stay true to who I am and be confident in who I am in any situation, no matter who's in the room, whether you're talking to, you know, 90 owners or you're talking to, you know, 90 young generation, future generation of fans. They're all important. Everybody puts their pants on one leg at a time, but you have to just have the confidence that you know what you're doing and that's why you're in this role.
That's awesome. What a great piece of advice. It's similar. I've got a bunch of quotes in my phone that I look at periodically and certain things that really resonate me. And one is an Oscar Wilde quote, very along the lines of what you just said, be yourself because everyone else is taken. I love that. It's like no one else in the world awesome. Can be you. So you've got to be you. When you're talking, you know, in particular to women about how to conduct themselves, how to own the space, be confident, especially when you're in a room full of men. I mean, a lot of us operate in male-dominated industries. It's just the way it is right now. What is your advice as far as how you conduct yourself as a professional woman in the industry?
Yeah, you know, I would just go back to the be true to yourself. I think that the most effective strategies when you enter any boardroom or conference room and you're trying to communicate ideas, make sure that you ground your ideas in data and insight because facts are hard to argue, and you use those points of data to build the rationale or reason why you're presenting a particular point of view or concept there. But I think that doing it, you know, with confidence and again, framing it in everything in your inner voice as a positive and reframing the negative into positive is critical. I don't think men question themselves when they say things in boardrooms, and women do. And so that's where you have to just put it out there and stand by your point of view.
Well, part of all the success that you've had means that you've got to constantly balance a crazy schedule and also a bi-coastal schedule. As you mentioned off the top of the podcast, you split your time between San Francisco and New York City. So how does all that work for you, Heidi? How do you balance your personal and your professional life when you're on two separate coasts?
And I'm in the air a lot, visiting a lot of the clubs.
Yes.
So it's really becomes, I live on Delta Airlines. I think everyone defines balance for themselves differently. And for me, I love to work. I've always loved to work. It's the thing that defines me. I get energized by every aspect of it. And so to me, it doesn't even feel like a balance. It just feels about choices with time. And so I spend a lot of time in New York. I'm away from my husband a lot. We try to, stay connected. It's a lovely thing that FaceTime exists. We actually will FaceTime each other while watching games from the opposite coast, so it feels like we're kind of sitting on the couch together watching the game. But you know, one of the things that I would say is that you always have to do two things. One, prioritize exercise in your life. It's the first thing that's the easiest thing to let go, and it's so important to have physical strength as well as mental and and spiritual strength. And so I really believe that you got to prioritize exercise. And then the other thing is to make sure you're surrounded by a network of trusted friends and loved ones. And I couldn't do this job and be everywhere without my husband as my, you know, rock and my partner. And, you know, even though, as I mentioned earlier, we don't see each other all the time, we're still with each other. And I feel his support and he feels mine no matter where we are in the world.
That's awesome. I think it's so true when you mention the family and your friends, that they have to be the trusted individuals that can really get you through tough days and great days and be there to support you no matter where you are in the world. That's so important. Have a good team around you. You mentioned exercise. I'm curious to get your thoughts on, you know, what you like to do to center yourself, what kind of exercises you like to engage with, what kind of, you know, diet do you try to adhere to, things that really help you when you're on this journey of constantly on the go.
Well, it depends on what coast I'm on. So when I'm on the West Coast, I have a personal trainer who has also been a great mentor to me, and I've been seeing him for years and years, and he's really focused on the high-intensity training kind of exercises, which I love, kettlebells, that kind of thing. When I'm on the East Coast, I love to do rumble boxing and hot hip-hop yoga. So I get a blend and a balance between the two coasts of my favorite exercises.
That is so cool. So I also am a boxer. I love it. And I go every day to a boxing gym in New York. So the next time you're in New York, we have to sync up and do our boxing routine together. That'd be fun. It's one of the most...
Oh, I love it.
It is the best. I learned how to box years ago in Boston, in South Boston. A trainer just taught me, and a girlfriend of mine kind of connected me with the sport. I was very intimidated at first because I just pictured, like, boxing, you know, in a ring with people hitting my head all the time. Like, I can't do that. But do you find it to be – I find it to be mentally and physically challenging at the same time. And every day I am still working out harder than the day before. It's like, without fail, I am dripping in sweat every time I work out boxing.
Oh. Yeah, it is no joke. It is a legitimate workout. And I think it's so interesting on the mental side of it, because I find that I try to not think when I'm boxing, because if I think too much, then I don't move very well, right? Mm. And then, you know, same with yoga is one of those things where you have to turn your mind solely on sort of all of the adjustments that you need to make in your body to be in the right place. So it is kind of like a vacation from work or thinking when you're working out in those two sports.
Yeah, I tried hip-hop yoga once, actually. Is it just the music that makes it different? That was the experience I had. I don't know if that's what you have, too.
Yeah, it was music, and it was heated to around 90 degrees. So it's, you know, it's not Bikram level hot, but it's
right.
Warm, hot, sweaty yoga.
I just love nice.
It. But the music is great. And it
yeah,
seems like
hear...
such a dichotomy to have, you know, yoga with hip hop, but it's fun.
It is fun indeed. So when you're traveling all this time, any travel tips that you like to adhere to, whether it's items you keep in your purse that are absolute necessities when you're flying, or packing tips? I know a lot of people like the rolling method. It's always nice to get somebody else's thoughts on travel tips.
So I'm a big fan of the cubes, the packing cubes, because they keep you organized. You can take it right out, put it in the hotel drawer, put it right back in. Love those. And I travel with lots of moisturizer. When you're in the air so much, you know, it's not too kind to your skin. So moisturize, moisturize, moisturize.
Yeah, I've never heard of the packing cubes. I have to look into that.
Oh, you're going to be a convert. I'm convinced of it. Yeah.
That's
fantastic.
That's awesome. Before we let you go, I mean, I want to backtrack just a little bit about your role models growing up. You know, we talked a lot about people that have given you advice over the years and how you've kind of paved your way in the industry. But from an early age, who were some of your role models that you really valued the lessons that they were teaching you?
So I was so lucky to have two amazing grandmothers who both of them started their own businesses basically before women were allowed to wear pants. You know what I mean? They both, each one had their own business. One had a gift shop and the other had a real estate business. And they taught me that they can be, you know, strong and powerful women, but also run the household. And they were truly the rocks in our family on both sides. And they both happened to be good friends. And they were both very positive and warm and loving. And I just look to them always. They're no longer with us, but look to them for, you know, continued mentorship and miss them dearly.
That's awesome. Well, they did a great job raising you and giving you lessons. You're certainly someone I admire and I look up to, and I'm so glad that you're able to join us at this busy time of year for this podcast. I know so many of our listeners are going to take so much out of this conversation. So, Heidi, thank you so much once again, and I'll look forward to seeing you. I know we cross paths at various events, so I look forward to seeing you the next time.
I look forward to it too, Catherine, and we'll get to boxing too soon.
Yes, yes, for sure. Yeah, we'll chat offline about that, but definitely sign me up.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Thanks, Heidi.
Day.
Our thanks to Heidi, and once again, our thanks to Kendall, Hillary, and Lee. I have known all of these individuals for a long time, and I am always inspired every time I get the opportunity to talk with them. I learn something new. I laugh. I'm able to pick up on so many different things that will help me and my career. And I'm just so proud to have them all here on the On Her Turf podcast. So I hope you all enjoyed listening, and be sure to listen to the On Her Turf podcast on the NBC Sports Scores app or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts. Have a great rest of your day, everyone. And be sure to join us next time for the On Her Turf podcast.